I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Happy New Year, Kiki!
Happy New Year, Tuesday!
2021, we're finally here. It looks a lot like 2020.
Yeah, it looks absolutely no different from 2020 from where I'm sitting.
I think this December is going to extend into January at this point. Though I think we're in our 300th and blah blah day of March.
The funny thing is that listeners are well acquainted with my feelings towards Christmas as a season. So not only did I have to deal with Christmas, you know, for the 2 months leading up to Christmas Day, as does everyone, but someone in my house decided that this is also the year we need to celebrate the 12 days of Christmas, which starts on Christmas and goes into January. So it's still Christmas in my house.
Three Kings Day! Woo! You are talking
we're
to a Latino.
We're going to Epiphany.
You are talking to a Latino, so we go all the way to January 6th. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to Epiphany. It's gonna happen in both our houses this year. I was looking forward to it being done, but like 2020, this is the Christmas that will not end.
But we are starting 2021 with a look back at classic Disney movies. This is something that we've wanted to do for a while, and the big decision is which movies are we going to look at. There's a lot of the classic Walt era movies that we could have looked at, and if we're going to start a look back at the classic movies, you got to start at the beginning, the very first animated movie from Disney Pictures. Basically the first animated film ever, at least in the United States, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves.
It launched the entire Disney, at least Disney animated feature idea. They had been well known for their shorts, of course, before this, and we talked about some of those early Mickey shorts previously. But the idea of taking animation and turning it into a feature was kind of a out there idea, at least in America. Like you said.
Nobody thought he would do it. They were calling it Disney's folly, that it was doomed to fail because no one wanted to sit in a theater for a movie-length cartoon. Going as far as to say that watching animation for that long of a time could turn someone blind. This was 1937, after all.
You know, I want to say, like, aw, look at those adorable people back in the olden times. But, yeah, we haven't progressed, sorry.
Just look at what's been going on the last year.
We've just survived 2020, barely by the skin of our teeth. We haven't progressed.
So yeah, no one really thought an animated movie would make any kind of money. And a lot of people within Disney themselves were trying to talk Walt out of doing it, including his wife and his brother and business partner, Roy O. Disney. When the two most important people in your life are telling you this is a bad idea, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, you know, there were parts on this production that he couldn't afford to pay the staff. You know, he was getting through it via just kind of gumption and charisma.
Yeah, and he was doing what he can. He mortgaged his house. He was showing an unfinished version of the film that he hated showing people unfinished versions of the film. He had to show it to bankers just to get an extended loan to finish the film.
Yeah, it's why the film starts out with a thank you to his crew.
Mm-hmm.
Because they stuck with him for some reason, you know? Yeah. I'm not sure if I would have in their position. I mean, my boss isn't able to pay me anymore. I don't think I'm sticking around at that point.
And this started a trend with Disney. Was it doesn't matter how much it costs, it's about the passion of making these films. And you got to respect Disney, young Walt Disney, for that kind of dedication to the craft. As he would grow older and get more responsibilities within the company, and the company grew bigger, that passion kind of faded away because he kind of became more of a businessman than an artist. That happens.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that
people.
Yeah, money does change people.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that when we get to later films. And so this was a project, one of those big passion projects for Walt. When he was a kid, he saw a silent film version of Snow White when he was, you know, back in Kansas. And that he wanted to do it better, especially with the technology that was advanced in the 30s. And even then, he was doing the shorts. We talked about the Mickey shorts, the Silly Symphonies. And the cartoons were constantly getting more expensive as technology advanced. But also, the residuals was getting less and less and less. So he kind of had to do a feature just to stay relevant. That's my view on it.
And the thing is I think that people will, at least at the time, I think people would go to see a feature more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
But shorts aren't really drawing people in. They've got to be changed out more frequently.
Like newsreels back in the day.
Yeah. You might go to see the same feature multiple times, but you kind of expect the shorts to switch out more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But this was an interesting one, though, because they considered all different types of animation techniques. How are we going to do this? They originally thought that they were going to rotoscope it.
Oh, there's a lot of rotoscoping if you look hard enough in this movie.
Well, I mean the entire film.
Ah.
And they took really, really, really extensive footage. We talked about it before because back in October we talked about Marge Champion dying, and she was the reference for Snow White. They took a lot of footage of her basically doing the entire film, acting it out in body language. So they had thought about rotoscoping over that footage entirely, but the animators hated that idea because they wanted more freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, they did a more freeform animation style, using it as reference rather than strict rotoscoping for the entire film.
And that's a technique that they would continue pretty much throughout the entire 2D era, where they would get the live sample, you know, a person acting out certain key moments of the film, and our artist just sketching it and trying to get the idea of, okay, this is where the arm will move if that motion were to go, and so on and so forth.
And this, it's basically a technique, although updated now, that they've done even with the most recent project that's just been released as we record this. Soul came out not too long ago, and in Soul, they have to do hands playing a piano for a jazz pianist. And what they did was they got noted jazz pianist and band leader for Stephen Colbert, John Batiste. They got him to play the piano. They filmed him playing those same songs, which he helped not necessarily write, but he helped flesh them out and orchestrate them and stuff like that. And they basically used a modern version of rotoscoping to animate over the footage of him playing. So that when you see those close-ups of the hands on the piano in Soul, that's actually, you know, if you know piano, you could sit down and follow that. Much like we talked about in Coco with the learning the guitar on film, you could kind of probably do the same thing with Soul.
Good old picture. When this movie did premiere, and it took a long time for them to make this movie, to the point that this movie wasn't finished until 2 weeks before it premiered. And so that shows you the crunch that these people were on. December 21st, 1937, so we just passed the movie's anniversary, where it debuted, and it was a hit. Supposedly there was a standing ovation once the film completed, and it became, up until Gone with the Wind, Snow White was the biggest movie of all time.
Yeah, which is kind of hard to imagine. We're used to Disney having the kind of big films, mm-hmm. but now the Disney big films are the Marvel films.
Yeah.
The animation stuff, even something like Frozen, which was the biggest thing in the world, still kind of pales in comparison to what the Marvel films are pulling in now for most of them.
Yeah. And that says a lot of all the movies that were out at that time, that it was this cartoon. And I think it's similar, and I hate saying it like this, it's very similar to how Avatar became the biggest movie of all time for a while. It was the novelty of this was the first cartoon movie, and how Avatar had used brand new technology, and people want to know what this movie was, what were they going to do with this new technology to make it look as good as it did. For Snow White, you have this novelty at the time of, we've seen these cartoon shorts before movies. Now we're going to see, now the cartoon is the feature. What is that about? And with people coming in there with that curiosity, again, this is my personal opinion, and then walking out applauding this movie and giving so much praise, especially considering that every critic in Hollywood was saying that this movie was going to fail. That itself says a lot.
Yeah. It's so weird to think of a time when this wasn't just the norm at films. You know, I mean, the idea of there just not only there wasn't Disney, but there wasn't Disney animation features.
Yeah.
Or any animation features.
And there were attempts.
It's as weird to me as thinking there was a time when movies didn't have sound. Like, I've seen silent movies, and it still kind of blows my mind that this was all there was.
And yeah, and the sounds were made by people in the theater doing the sound. Like, you would mostly, it's mostly an organ player, but, you know, yeah, that was it. And then you ask a young person, and there was a time where there was no such thing as color, and that'll blow their mind.
Yeah, and we're getting to the point now where I know my friends with kids are saying that their kids don't understand that there was a time when you had to wait a week to watch your TV show.
Oh, I've had that discussion in the last year over The Mandalorian.
Yeah, it's just that kids didn't understand that, like, you couldn't just watch SpongeBob whenever you wanted. Yeah.
Or wherever you wanted. Yeah.
or wherever you wanted. Like, you can't watch it in the car. You can't watch it on a Saturday. You have to wait until Tuesday or Wednesday or something. And I was like, it does not compute, because that's not the world they live in.
Or a world before television. You couldn't watch your movies at home. Or home video at all. You had to go to the theater. That's why movies would get re-released. And if you wanted to see this movie, you had to go to the theater.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird to think of this not just as it founded Disney, basically. I mean, this is not even released by Disney Pictures. It's an RKO originally.
Yeah, this was the first, and we've talked about RKO's relationship back when we talked about Peter Pan and how that was the final movie to be released by RKO before Disney just started releasing their own stuff.
But, you know, there's not even a Walt Disney Studios as we think of it. They're still using other people's infrastructure.
This is that time before Disney was the biggest company in the world.
And just the fact that you couldn't just take the kids to see an animated kids movie at all. This started so many things, and it's mind blowing to think of how many things we take for granted started with this film.
There wouldn't be a Disneyland without this movie.
Yeah. Where do you go after the Super Bowl? You're not going to Disney World unless you got Snow White.
I'm going to Coney Island. Doesn't really
sound as
good.
We're going to the Dells.
Going to the Dells. Oh.
I never got to go to the Dells.
And you lived out well.
Yeah, I never did. Oh. So let's kind of talk about who we've got in this film. Because now... We talk about frequently, and much to my chagrin usually, that Disney animated features now in the casting are all about the stunt casting. It's all about the big names. But not so much with this one. They got a lot of people who were just kind of, not complete unknowns, but they weren't huge, huge, huge names. We have, let's start with the main one there. We've got Adriana Caselotti, who was a singer, of course. She was the daughter of an opera singer.
There's a lot of opera in Snow White's voice.
Yeah. She, though, wasn't so much an opera singer by profession. Her mother was. She was basically a chorus girl. Hmm. And she had a contract for a while at MGM, but she wasn't one of their kind of on-screen talents. She was like a session recorder. She was somebody that would sing in choruses and stuff for recordings. She wasn't really on camera talent. Disney heard her. He had hired another woman to do the voice of Snow White. Mm-hmm. And then he heard a recording of Caselotti, and he thought that she sounded more like a 14-year-old than the woman he had already hired. And so he fired the original actress and went with Adriana instead. And she does have, I'm going to say, and this is probably blasphemy, so, you know, get out your Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. Snow White has the most annoying Disney princess voice of any Disney princess. Her voice is like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Oh, it's seven little children.
Well, yeah, it to me, it's the same thing that, like, you know, I have a problem with, like, the Betty Boop voice and stuff like that, too. Mm-hmm. It's this idea of an adult woman trying to sound babyish and naive And there, I don't know, there's a lot of, like, weird sexist stuff, like, tied up in that for me. But I just, I don't like that, that method of doing things. It doesn't feel real to me. And I'm glad we've kind of gotten away from it. It's really difficult now to find a voice actress that kind of does that anymore. It's very much gone out of style, which I'm glad. But the interesting thing is that she was paid $970 to do the voice of Snow White.
Do we have an inflation adjustment on that one?
Just over $17,000 as of 2019.
That's still under, that's still below wage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a year or whatever. But the problem is that she isn't credited in the film. We know who she is now.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, she didn't really get any credit. And the problem is that some of that was a put on. It does seem that she had enough of that in her regular voice that she could be identified as Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it basically killed her career. This was basically the beginning and ending of her career.
Ooh, that sucks.
She had one line in The Wizard of Oz. She is the one going, "Wherefore art thou, Romeo?" Also uncredited.
Picture me a balcony, above a voice sings low.
"Wherefore art thou, Romeo?"
"I hear a beat. Oh, sweet."
She has that one line. And she's also singing in a bar in It's a Wonderful Life, also uncredited. And that was her entirety of her Hollywood career.
Wow.
Lots of people wanted to hire her for other things, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney put his foot down.
Huh.
Famously, Jack Benny said that he had tried to hire her, and Disney would not give permission and said that it would ruin the image of Snow White to have her voice appear anywhere else.
We never said Disney was a perfect person, nor have we said he was a kind person. Yeah.
So the thing is that, yes, this has made her famous and immortal, basically, in film history. But it also prevented her from getting meaningful work at any other point in her career, really. She's the most famous Disney princess, probably, and nobody really knows her name. So,
yeah,
kind of sad. We're going to move on to The Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is one of those fascinating things you discover doing research for the podcast that totally blew my mind. Our totally unnamed prince,
mm-hmm,
that shows up twice in this film and only sings one song.
Literally one song.
He is sung wonderfully by Harry Stockwell. Does that last name sound familiar to you?
Like Dean Stockwell?
He is the father of Dean Stockwell.
Huh.
Yeah, Dean Stockwell is the son of the prince from Snow White. So Al in Quantum Leap, the son of the prince in Snow White. Harry Stockwell was mostly a theater actor. Mm-hmm. He spent 5 years on Broadway in the starring role of Curly in Oklahoma.
5 years?
5 years on Broadway. 5 years, 8 shows a week.
Nowadays, you'd be lucky to get a lead for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, good grief, 1 year, and people are going like, oh my goodness, are you gonna stay in that role forever? So 5 years, that's just amazing. Yeah, he had a few a few parts in film, but not exactly like a household name in film. It was mostly on Broadway and in theater.
And Harry Stockwell sings the prince again, like Snow White sings, very operatically.
Yeah, he does have that same quality. But if you know the part of Curly in Oklahoma, that calls for a very similar voice style. So it was kind of in his wheelhouse, I think. Rounding out kind of the big three, we have our first Disney villain.
The first ever villain.
Yeah, Lucille Laverne.
As the queen, the evil queen, the wicked queen, the nameless queen.
Yeah, just the queen. She was kind of known for playing these really mean, cutting, scathing, kind of harpy women on screen and in theater as well. So she had a couple of early film roles. She worked with D.W. Griffith. She was unfortunately known quite a lot on stage for blackface. Moving on. She was already established as kind of the bad woman, the acerbic woman, unlikable in her characters.
So she was already playing villains.
Yeah, she was already playing villains, and so at that point it was kind of typecasting when Disney found her. And you're going to find that holds through as we go through a few choice ones of the Seven Dwarfs. Speaking of people who were typecast, we have spoken before on the show of the current voice actor, Maurice LaMarche, having the bizarre talent of being able to burp on cue, or at least make a sound that sounds like a burp, and that's his kind of calling card. When you need somebody to burp on cue, you call him. Well, at the time, there was a guy who did the similar, but for sneezing. So who are you going to get to play Sneezy the Dwarf? You're going to get Billy Gilbert, the comedian known for comedy sneezing. Not kidding, that was a large part of his shtick. He was a vaudevillian, as most of the dwarves kind of were. And he got into voice work later on. He voiced Willy the Giant in Mickey and the Beanstalk as well. So, worked with Disney again a few times. But was put to good use and might even be the reason why there's an entire dwarf built around sneezing, you know. Because it seems like a very bizarre thing to base a character around. But I guess if you've already got Billy Gilbert out there and you want to work with him, you're going to write it into the script.
I mean, that was one of the big things is, what are we going to call the dwarves? There's several pages of names that they were going to call the dwarves, and they picked seven and they went with them. On that list, you know, we almost had Sneezy was almost called Snoopy years before Charles Schulz ever discovered the name.
That would have been interesting. Talking about taking people's shtick and just turning it into a dwarf, we've got Roy Atwell playing Doc. Mm-hmm. And Doc's gimmick is that he's constantly mispronouncing things and switching words around, and which was what Roy Atwell was known for.
Radio is a business, yes. And the old saying, the early word catches the berm. The Burmy earl catches the early word catches the bird. He gets the bird, but something. Well, let it go.
I do want to give a little bit. We have talked about this actor before, but Pinto Kovic, who does both Grumpy and Sleepy.
Yep.
And most people know him as the original voice of Goofy. And you actually get a bit of Goofy in this movie, because there's a part where when Snow White wakes up, one of the dwarves does Goofy's, whoa!
Whoa!
And it's like, that's Goofy. That is, yep, totally Goofy's voice. All we needed was someone doing the Goofy holler.
Yeah, he had already been working with Walt, of course, during the shorts, and just brought over to round out the cast, of course. But in such a wonderful, beautiful way, I really like his performance.
Yeah.
Especially as Grumpy. Grumpy is my favorite of the dwarves.
Considering a few weeks ago you were talking about how much you love Oscar.
Yeah, I kind of have a soft spot for the cranky characters in various things. I think it's also because Grumpy gets kind of more screen time than a lot of, you know, Sleepy, yeah, doesn't really say a lot.
Grumpy is, I mean, say, coming from a modern point of view, it's very, even by this movie standard, was very He-Man.
He should have been called misogyny.
That's what I was going for, misogyny.
Yeah.
Like, women gonna make you, gonna have you wash behind your ears, and you're gonna make wear that perfume. We shouldn't have a girl in the house.
He's kind of one of the few dwarves that acts like he's supposed to be a grown man.
Grumpy is one of the few, he's probably the only dwarf in this movie with a character arc.
And yeah, he does have a character arc, yeah.
It's a small one, but he's the only one that has any kind of character change in that. In the beginning, he is completely against Snow White. He's the only dwarf against Snow White staying with them. But by the end of the movie, he's warmed up to her and even telling her, hey, watch out, the evil queen is going to be out there. You got to watch your back while we're gone. And, you know, he warms up to Snow.
And eventually he gets to the point where, you know, he kind of looks forward to her kissing him on the head as he goes off to work. And, you know,
to the point where she bakes a pie with his name on it.
Yeah, how sweet. I did want to mention kind of one other person just here in passing. Mm-hmm. We've got the voice of the magic mirror, because mm-hmm. it is so iconic and continues to be used a little bit more. We've got Moroni Olsen. Mm-hmm. He was also, we talked about Snow White herself showing up in It's a Wonderful Life. He also shows up in It's a Wonderful Life.
Hmm.
He is the voice of the senior angel that, you know, delivers the information and quest to Clarence. So, but he was a massive character actor.
And they had him speaking monotone this whole movie.
Yeah, but he shows up in so many films between the 30s and the 50s. and was in a lot of westerns. A lot of westerns. But he's also in, you know, he shows up in some Hitchcock movies and a few other, you know, Mildred Pierce and some of these kind of classics from the golden age of Hollywood there. So very, very interesting and well-known character actor, and honestly, probably the one who had the longest running career of any of the ones we've named, I think, at least on camera. So, yeah, pretty interesting cast, and mostly comedians for the dwarves and people who are kind of lesser known character actors to round out the rest of the cast.
It works for Disney because at that time, Disney really only knew how to do, for lack of a better term, only knew how to do comedy. He had, you know, his big thing was trying to get a lot of what he called, you know, gags into the movie, jokes into the movie. I forgot to mention this earlier, but he actually had a contest with everyone who worked for him at the time that if your joke got into the movie, that you would get a $5 bonus for that. Now, $5 in 1937 is about $150 in 2020 money.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so, I don't exactly know what the roundabout is, but yeah.
Give or take. So that's a pretty good bonus. And a lot of people's jokes got into that movie. And imagine, you know, you're working for Disney. Said, yeah, if your joke gets into our very first movie, you get a bonus. And aren't you going to throw every funny gag you can think of, even if it doesn't make sense for the movie?
Yeah. And let's just go ahead and get into it.
I want to talk first real quick. Oh. Real quick, I want to talk about the restoration done on this movie for Disney Plus.
Okay.
This movie looks gorgeous. Whatever they did to restore this movie I believe this is from the Blu-ray a few years ago. This movie looks probably better now than it ever looked when it was in the theaters in the 30s. I don't know whatever technique that they used, but this movie looks gorgeous. And you're the one with the 4K TV. You tell me.
I would say individually it did, and I had a bit of a problem, and I don't know if it was like my internet connection or what, but there were parts of this movie that stuttered weirdly.
I did not notice a stutter, but
it could very well be my connection. I realized that, you know, we're watching it over the internet through a streaming service, so you have to account for that. But when you freeze frame the film, I absolutely agree with you. I would have to watch it back on a different day and see if I had that same kind of stutter issue. Mm-hmm. But at any given point, just freezing the film, it just looks like the most beautiful painting. They were still using that kind of watercolor-ish gouache kind of thing that we talked about before.
Yeah, they hired this was the first film they hired that guy on. They hired a guy who specifically did watercolor art for the backgrounds of this movie.
Yeah, and it's so dreamy and fascinating, you know, to kind of look at the, and there are some parts where it really does have that kind of muted, washed out kind of watercolor look, because it'll look kind of fuzzy and dreamy and cloudy, and then it'll resolve into a clearer picture. Like the dwarves around her bed at the end of the film.
Yeah.
And it's very kind of fuzzy and impressionistic, and then it comes into sharp focus. It's such a beautiful transition, and honestly, I don't really know how that's accomplished, but it's...
The multiplane camera. Oh, yeah, and this, again, they invented the multiplane camera not too long before this, so yeah, the first film to use that, obviously. Of course, this starts with what would become a tradition for a lot of these movies, the opening of the storybook. And, yeah, this the storybook opening was filmed in live action. I mean, you could, if you go to certain exhibits, you can actually see the original book that they actually filmed with Snow White. I don't know if that's the actual original book or a recreation, but this opening part with the storybook and the ending part with the storybook, that's all live action. Probably because they couldn't actually animate that at the time.
And even, you know, all the way up through Enchanted, where they make fun of that.
Yeah.
Where they have the beginning of Enchanted starting with opening the storybook in that same way.
I think Shrek made fun of that better.
I think Shrek. Well, yeah, but that wasn't Disney at the time.
So yeah, we get the storybook, we get the Once Upon a Time and all that. Again, stuff that we see now as that's a trope, that's a Disney thing. This was brand new. And probably has been done in other movies. You'll get frames of Once Upon a Time, this, that, and the other on the screen. But it's just to see this in a Disney movie, this is like the first.
Yeah, I wonder, since we're talking about the look of the film as well, it is sort of bizarre to realize how much of this film's look comes from the last place you would expect, which was German Impressionist cinema of the 1930s.
Yeah.
Well, and kind of a bit before, you know, kind of the 20s and 30s and stuff. The films that they had the animators watch, like Metropolis, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Nosferatu, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. These were not at all either kids' films or fairy tales or anything of the sort. I mean, three of them are straight up horror films, and one of them is one of the earliest sci-fi films in cinema, you know. Not at all what you would think the animators would be watching for inspiration for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, you know?
Yeah.
But they pulled a lot of the kind of scarier scenes from the style of these films. So the whole running through the forest scene where everything turns into evil creatures and stuff.
Snow White has a very vivid imagination.
Yeah, I don't. We'll get into that. I have words. The transformation scene of the witch was very much taken from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So really interesting thinking of them watching like horror films. German horror films on top of it to do this, but yeah,
Disney had his vision, I guess. And yeah,
it works wonderfully. I'm just no hate on it. It's an interesting idea.
And I love that there are pictures, if you can find them, of people took of Disney literally acting out the movie as they're doing the storyboards, like holding the apple and just pretty much acting the entire movie as a one-man show to tell his animators how he wants it to look and how he wants it to feel. And those movies itself probably is part of that vision.
Yeah. Let's get into some of the stuff about the plot, because there's not much plot here, and what there is, you already know it. You know the plot of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Don't tell us you don't. We're not going to handhold you through this one.
Either you've seen this movie or someone read the story to you. You know the story of Snow White and Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah.
What I find is very interesting is that we get the entire backstory of Snow White and the Queen through text, through the storybook. If this movie was made today, that would be the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Easily, but also remember that you had an audience who, for the most part, remembered silent film. Mm-hmm. So it's very much a silent film opening.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the title cards in a silent film giving us the backstory so that we can get to the action.
And sometimes I feel that I wish that Dad would come back. That way we can just get to the meat and potatoes of what this movie, or what these more recent movies would be about. But apparently we need 2.5 hour runtime than every movie.
Yeah, this is a much shorter film than you remember it.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half.
Yeah, but also, it is the plot of a 10-minute short film.
Well, Disney,
in an
again,
hour and a half.
Yeah, again, they were used to making shorts, so that's all they know how to write. And this, if you look at this movie the way it is, and a lot of the early Disney movies, it's very episodic, that you could take segments of this movie and you could have released it as its own short. And in some ways, they actually did, because I remember seeing segments of these movies aired on the Disney Channel as shorts, either between shows and during commercial breaks, or as part of their big compilation cartoon shows, usually either early in the morning or early evening, with they would show the half-hour block of classic shorts. You would often get a few-minute clip of one of the Disney movies, and it worked as a short, amazingly, but that's because that's what they knew how to do back then.
Yeah, you could have very well serialized this. You could have chopped it up and put, like, a little title card at the end being like, you know, what will the Huntsman do now that the Queen has given him his quest to go kill Snow White? Find out next time when...
Yeah. Snow White, Episode 3, The Huntsman.
Yeah. The only problem is that I think to a modern audience, this plays very differently. Because I think a modern audience expects story from their kids' films.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time, well, at the time, nobody really knew what to expect, of course.
Yeah.
But at the time, shorts were mostly gags. And
yeah,
like we said, that's what Disney knew how to do. So it's a little bit of plot, and then it's a sequence of Snow White running into the forest and having an absolute freaking meltdown. What is wrong with this girl? Have you never seen a tree before? What is wrong with you?
I think that Snow White just never left the castle grounds before, considering she's the princess. And the story here that the queen has made her personal servant just because of her vanity and all that. So it's like, I don't think she's ever left the castle in her life.
Yeah, so she may have never seen a tree before. Yeah, I just kind of, there's that point where she like passes out and all the little woodland creatures like tiptoe out to be like, what is wrong with this girl?
at least we get like the little bird that she rescues earlier in the movie kind of comes back. Kind of pays her back for saving his little life by, hey, all my animal friends, we're going to have you break into this house that 7 people live in.
Yeah. The movie starts out really good. I really like the opening sequences.
With the magic mirror, yeah.
With the magic mirror, you get the queen's motivation kind of very clearly. I mean, she's still absolutely bonkerdoodles, but you at least understand what's going on with her. And then you get Snow White singing into a wishing well, and then a guy shows up and she's like, oh look, it is the first man I have ever seen in my entire life. Guess I must be in love.
Well, she just said, I'm wishing for the one I love. Apparently that's the guy that she loves, even though she just met him right then and there.
Well, I was standing by a wishing well and then a man showed up, so I guess I have to marry him now.
I wished for a man, and then a man showed up. Wish granted.
I guess.
Although, movies involving wishing is kind of controversial these days.
Let's not get into that.
if you know, you know.
I like that Disney is finally deconstructing that in their films. You know, especially with Enchanted and Frozen, where it's like, you just met this guy. You're not getting married.
That scene with the wishing well is so iconic that it's part of Disneyland. Like, you can go to Disneyland and see Snow White's wishing well. And if you are there at a certain time, the I'm Wishing song will play, and depending on where you're standing, if you're standing directly by the wishing well, you will hear Snow White's echo. But if you're a few feet away from it, you'll just hear Snow White singing. So it's like two different tracks. And the fact that you can go to Snow White's wishing well and is just, that shows you how much this one scene is considered so iconic among Disney that that has to be in the park.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's not a bad scene in kind of in its own universe.
Mm-hmm.
Taken by itself, it's a very beautiful, cute, sweet little scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue, we talked about it, it showed up in one of those new Mickey Mouse shorts that we talked about previously. Where Minnie kind of reenacts this scene next to the wishing well.
Yeah. With Snow White.
With Snow White.
Meaning, yeah.
So it's not that any of these are bad scenes, but I think that that's the crux of it. They're individual short films that have kind of been shoved together to make a feature.
Yeah.
A lot of it doesn't feel like it flows from one scene to another.
Again, you got a bunch of people who only know how to do shorts. They don't know how to write a movie. So they just wrote a bunch of shorts and put them together.
Yeah. And we get the first part of the film kind of seems to flow with a plot up until the point where the huntsman says that he can't kill Snow White and releases her into the forest. Snow White has her infamous German expressionist breakdown. And then we are in a completely different movie.
Yep.
This Again, is not even the same film at that point.
What Walt wanted with this movie was he wanted the humans to look very realistic, which is what we talked about earlier with, almost rotoscoping all of these humans. But the animals look very Disney cartoonish.
Yeah.
Like they don't look like realistic animals. They look like, you know, the same kind of animals that we would be hanging around with Mickey Mouse and friends.
And the dwarves kind of look somewhere in between. A lot of it has the movement of actual humans, like when they walk and stuff. But when it's time for the comedy, they move like Mickey Mouse would. They start getting very rubbery and wibbly, you know. But Snow White herself is very much an actual human. The animals are somewhere in total cartoon area, and then the dwarves are in this weird middle space. So you got kind of three different animation styles going at the same time.
And the flow of the humans, that's why I said the rotoscoping, that the humans, the way they flow, it feels like they were rotoscoped completely.
Yeah, it's very realistic, and I think it's more because I don't think they really started bringing in animals and stuff until Bambi.
And a lot of it is, one of the big problems in producing this movie was, Walt wanted all the humans to move like actual people and not like his cartoons, and that was something that his team didn't really know how to do. Which is what led to the bringing in actors to act out the scenes. And I think that's why the humans look almost rotoscoped as they do in this movie, because they didn't really know how to handle actual human proportions at that time.
They actually got one of the people who worked on Betty Boop to come in because he knew how to do realistic female, well, sort of realistic female body proportions better than the people already working with Disney. He had studied human female form for his work on Betty Boop, and so they brought him in to bring that expertise because they just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
The bit with the dwarves is an entirely different movie.
Yeah, I mean, you even get a nice little fade out after the work, after the Whistle While You Work song. And if you had just put the end, Walt Disney Pictures, yeah, it wouldn't have been a satisfying ending, but you wouldn't be out of, like, okay, this is how a short would end. And then you go into a completely different short starring the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, and the dwarves show up, and it's about the halfway mark of the movie before the main plot asserts itself again in any way.
Yeah. We get 20 minutes of Snow White's story, and now we're getting 20 minutes of the dwarf story.
Yeah, and it's not that it's a bad film, the dwarf part of the film, of course. Mm. But it's such a tonal shift, and I think that they were thinking, well, we don't want to scare kids too much, because you've got these wild whiplash moments of, here's Snow White in the deep scary forest, whistle while you work, you know.
Yeah,
it comes one right after the other, and the same thing happens with, you know, we have that scene where the queen turns into the hag, and I think the next scene is Silly Song.
Yeah.
And it's just a mad smash cut, like straight from, like, I'm going to kill Snow White. Here is the poisoned apple. And then it's like, this is a Silly Song. Let's do silly things.
Yeah. Okay. Big question. Who are these dwarves getting these diamonds for? Because they get the diamonds from the mine and they just lock it in a closet. Like, are they selling the diamonds? Are they giving the diamonds to royalty or whatever? Or are they just, you know, just greedy people just locking it away so no one else can have it? Are they Scrooge McDucking this thing?
There is a short that came out during the war years that was made to sell war bonds. That does talk about the fact that the Seven Dwarves each take an equal share of the gems to do with how they want. So I think they're kind of, they mine them up, and then the seven of them divide them equally, and then what they do with them after that is up to them, I think. I don't know for sure, but the interesting part of that short was it says that Dopey's cut is he chooses all the throwaway gems. You know, we see Doc there and he's like, you know, tapping on them and looking at them with a jeweler's eyepiece. And he throws some away and Dopey sweeps them up. That's apparently his cut, but he chose it to be his cut. Which I find kind of interesting that Dopey is like, I will take the discard pile.
Well, he's kind of the odd one out of the dwarves. He's the one that doesn't talk. He's also the one that doesn't have a beard.
So I think that that's such an interesting little character bit that's not in the movie, but it's fleshed out later in a different short. Apparently, in the Disney park, if you're around Snow White at a meet and greet, at certain points, she will inform you that Dopey continues to eat soap. That she can't stop him from eating soap. And he constantly goes around hiccuping bubbles, and then she will ask the guest, what do you do to cure hiccups? So that I can tell Dopey. Which I think is kind of cute.
Okay, so how far are they from? Okay, let's go back here. How far are these dwarves from this mine that they're just singing this one song the whole time? And that has to get annoying.
Well,
they
leave before the sun goes down. They don't show up at the cabin until the sun is, like, down. Because Snow White's already asleep.
Yeah. All the time singing, hi-ho, hi-ho, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Also, we never find out in the movie, like, who are they? Are they brothers? Why do they live in a house together? Why do they not have any mates? Like, yeah. Are there dwarf women around somewhere?
I mean, I was going to mention this later, and we talked about this before we recorded, but there was going to be a Seven Dwarves movie at some point that might have answered all these questions, but considering it was going to be one of those direct-to-video movies, maybe it was for the best.
I think in Once Upon a Time, in that awful series they did, I think it said that the Seven Dwarves were all brothers who hatched from eggs at the same time.
There was also an eighth dwarf, so...
Dwarves lay eggs,
and there are no female dwarves. Every dwarf is male.
You're apparently siblings if you hatch at the same time or something. I don't know.
It
hurts my head.
But again, it coming from the Once Upon a Time, there are no female dwarves. They all, you know, hatch from eggs. So apparently male dwarves just lay eggs. And you get your name from your pickaxe.
Okay.
So, like...
Sure. There's a reason why I didn't watch that series after, like, the first half of season. Anyway.
So, yeah, let's...
But... I want to go back to the main plot, because the main plot of this movie is really good. I like the way that they do the queen going down into her, like, secret magic room. Like, do the people of the kingdom know that she's a witch? It seems like they do, because Grumpy, like, yells, like, the queen's going to show up and put magic on us. So I guess the people just accept that the queen is a witch.
I mean, yeah, even, you know, Grumpy said that the queen's a witch. She's in, you know, she could be here right now, invisible.
I also like the fact that they tell this girl, like, do not let anybody in. And apparently Snow White at first takes that very literally, like, well, I'm not going to let anybody in, but she's standing on the other side of the wall, so that's fine to talk to her.
Yeah.
and tell her I'm all alone here.
Yeah. I mean, I get it from their point of view. Hey, the queen could still hire other people to come and get you. So make sure, you know, you don't tell anyone that you're here. And first person that comes up, oh, I'm here all alone. There's nobody here. I'm just waiting. Hopefully the queen hasn't sent anyone to kill me.
I love that basically they should have been like, I think the moral of this movie is don't talk to door-to-door salesmen.
Well, don't talk to strangers is a good lesson to teach children.
Well, it's not even just strangers. Like, she shows up and she's like, you want the men folk to like you, buy my apples. Look, I just happen to have a bunch of apples right here. First one's free, premium on the rest.
You want an apple, kid? First one's free, the next one you gotta pay for it. The dwarf should have at least left someone there to take care of the Kate to watch her, but knowing them, it would have been dopey.
Yeah. Or sleepy.
Yeah.
I think pretty much all of them, there's a problem leaving them behind. Like, I think the story still ends the same way, no matter what. Again, yeah. The dwarves are not really part of the movie at this point. It's like, we have finished with the dwarf movie, and now back to our main plot already in progress.
Yeah.
I want to say that the scene where they show the apple getting the poison on it, that iconic, yeah, that iconic skull apple thing, maybe one of the most enduring images in Disney history.
They actually put that in a t-shirt. When Ralph Breaks the Internet came out, she's wearing a shirt with the poison apple on it that says poison, and they actually sold that. You can go to you can go to the Disney park and buy the shirt with the poison apple on it.
They also have a scented candle that is the, you know, an apple scent that has that poison apple image on it. They sell it as a mug where you can get an apple shaped mug that looks like the skull. I've even seen, you know, this is not official Disney merchandise, of course, but there are people that have turned that image into like cross stitch patterns and stuff as well.
Even the heart shaped, why does the queen have a box with a heart with a dagger through it? I don't know. But I've seen that at the Disney store. They sell it as a jewelry box, but, you know, you also could put the heart of the woman that's more prettier than you into it so you can be fairest in the land.
You know, I think at the point that you go, here I have a box, put her heart in it, I'm thinking that's not your first heart-taken rodeo, you know?
I've always got the feeling that Snow White is not the first pretty girl prettier than her that she's killed.
Yeah, I have a feeling that this has been a lifelong quest, and that may be how she became queen in the first place. Like, the king was like, well, my first wife died, I need a new wife. Well, nobody's prettier than this woman. Might as well marry her.
Yeah.
All the rest of the women are either underage girls or really ugly women.
I mean, there's even versions of the story that say that the old hag is her true form and she used magic to look beautiful.
I don't know, because she very specifically crafts that facade.
Again, this is just depending on where you're getting your original stories, or definitely not the Disney version.
Yeah, in the Disney version, she very specifically crafts the old hag as a facade. Like, that's her costume she's wearing, and she puts every piece of it together. So, yeah, that really doesn't hold up in the Disney version.
This spell, though, the mummy dust and the shrieking cackle and wind to blurt it all together, thunder to mix it. It's just, that whole sequence is amazing.
And we get our first instance of everything vile is lime.
Yeah, green.
Yeah. All, which is the all things evil are green. When she mixes the potion together and the lightning hits it, it turns into that lime green color that is now every evil magic character.
Yeah.
Or even not magic, because that same green color is associated with, like, Scar in The Lion King.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the origin of that in Disney. The thing is that she does play on Snow White's naivete and kind heart. You know, I'm an old woman, let me in, give me some water, you know. Then she calls it a wishing apple because she knows Snow White loves the wishing well. She's watched her at the wishing well.
And of course that she's been wishing for a man.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you eat the apple, you'll get your wish, and she wishes for her prince.
I love that the queen goes, wait, I have to see if there's a counteragent to my poison. And then it's like, love's first kiss. And she's like, oh, that's fine. That'll never happen.
Those dwarves don't actually, you know, the dwarves will think she's dead, and they'll bury her alive.
Yeah.
Like, it's not gonna kill her. Like she like wants Snow White to suffer for the crime of being prettier than her.
So what happens if the prince had already kissed her? Like, what happens if they like had met at the wishing well and he was like, and now a kiss before I go, and then left?
If they had already kissed, I don't think it would work, because it has to be love's first kiss that breaks the spell. So if they had already kissed and she ate the apple, that's it.
I mean, if this is used on a different person, you know, like you already used it on like a already married woman or something.
Yeah.
That's like, well, sucks to be you. You just sleep forever. But
yeah, and one of the few Disney movies that straight up says death and not referencing it as anything other than death. And again, now you would see it as, oh, that's a PG-13 thing. This was a G-rated, by all intents and purposes, this is a G-rated movie.
Well, yeah, they say the word death, but they don't actually show death.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to the point of the queen dying, they just show the vultures kind of sitting there, and then they show her falling, and then they show the vultures looking at each other like, well, dinner time, and then they circle off, and it's like, yeah, if you know what vultures eat, you know she's dead.
They don't actually ever see, you don't actually see Snow White ever actually eating the apple. Like, you see her make the wish, you see her, you know, she puts the apple up to her mouth, you cut to the dwarves riding the animals trying to get home, and then she gets dropped dead and there's a bite out of the apple. I don't know if that was an artistic choice or they just didn't know how to animate that.
That's a good question. I never really thought about that, that they might just not have known how to animate the mouth properly for that.
I mean, there is a deleted scene in this movie of the soup song. I don't know if you've ever heard of this.
Yeah.
So, and it's supposed to be the dwarves eating the soup that Snow White made. Maybe that's another thing. Like, they just couldn't get that perfect.
Maybe. I don't actually know that part, but it's a good theory. I'd love to know the for real answer. I think that that the image of her laying in that glass coffin is also one of the most iconic Disney images that has survived this movie.
How often has that been parodied? And I'm, you know, in Trek, but also in other works where you just see the beautiful princess just lying in there. They even kind of go back to it in Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. And honestly, Disney kind of took inspiration from a Romeo and Juliet film that had just come out about a year before this was released as the image of, you know, the young girl lying in state there, kind of in the deathly pose.
Only the dwarves don't do what Romeo did.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing. She's there for like a year, because they show the changing seasons of her lying there.
Yeah, she's essentially in a coma for a year.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that I guess the dwarves just figure shrug magic, because there is no decay, there's no, you know.
I mean, not that we would want to see that. Yeah, the text even says that they couldn't bring themselves to bury her. Like, even in death, as they say, she was still beautiful, so they couldn't bury her, so they built this coffin out of glass and gold to have her as a decorative centerpiece.
Well, she's out in the forest. It's not like they kept her in the house, you know.
Some versions do have her in the house, but at least, again, protect her from the elements. Yes, it has a glass over the body, but you're still leaving this thing out into the elements. A good strong wind will knock that thing over.
And it does. It says that the dwarves kind of keep a constant vigil, but it looks more like the animals do, and then the dwarves show up to change out the flowers and stuff like that.
Well, they go to work, then they come back, they mourn, and then they go to work, and they come back, and they mourn.
Hi ho, it's to mourn snow we go.
Yeah. And finally, you know, we get the prince who once again sings his one song. And that entire thing with the prince, that you can't tell me that isn't rotoscoped.
It looks amazing. I did notice that watching the film. I was like, every movement this character makes is so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing, the thing that I want to know is, has that dude just been riding a horse around the kingdom for a year going, one song I have but what? Okay, not here. One song I have but one song. Anyone? One song? Okay.
Well, we don't know where this prince comes from. We know that he was from another kingdom, came there.
He comes from the castle on the cloud. Don't you know how to watch a movie?
But he's not the prince of Snow White's kingdom, of the queen's kingdom. He was just there because, you know, he's a prince, and as a prince, he needs to marry a princess or a queen. It's quite possible that the queen had him come to there to marry her, but then he had to see Snow White.
Why would she do that? It seems that she already had the power in the kingdom. If she'd have married a man, he would have probably gotten the power in the kingdom.
No one said she was smart. She didn't really want the power. She just wanted to be known as the most beautiful woman in the world.
I'm more concerned that this is the guy who lives on a cloud.
It's the fairy tale.
Is he perhaps the son of the giant in Jack and the Beanstalk?
Maybe. But we haven't gone to that movie yet.
Oh. Look, let's kind of wrap this thing up.
Like, he kisses her, she wakes up, she sees the prince, and is like, all right, carry me away to your castle in the clouds, and we will live happily ever after, while the dwarves are happy and cheering that their friend, who's also their maid and cook and servant girl, even though she was just a servant girl to the queen, that's another story entirely, and then, oh, well, I'm going to get married now, bye. And that's something I want to say, because she was made to be the servant girl of the queen, to dilute her beauty, and then she runs away, and then she's essentially a servant girl to the seven dwarves. Yes, they treat her well, and they love her and all of that, but she's still cleaning their house and cooking their food and all of that.
Yeah, but they didn't make her a servant girl. This chick was breaking and redecorating, okay? She did that herself.
Because she thought it was seven children. And they don't
she
know how to
she just wanders in and is like, oh, wow, I'm going to be judgy about your house. Let me start rearranging all your stuff.
She does volunteer, says, let me stay here and I'll cook and clean. That's fair. Say what you will, but that's at least fair.
I mean, at that point, it's basically rent.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, eight people living in a house that's kind of modern living right now.
Yeah.
Eight people living in one big apartment.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Dwarf Cottage has the same rent price as a studio apartment in New York.
Yeah.
So, this movie as a whole, we gotta talk about the big question now.
Does Snow White and the Seven Dwarves have the magic? Yeah. This is still a beautiful film. This is, even it, by today's standards, it's cliche, and by today's standards, it's, you know, run of the mill, but for what it was and the historical value of it, and just as a movie in general, yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, this is still a good movie.
I'm going to say a qualified yes. It is a yes for historical purposes. It's a yes for how beautiful it is. Mm. But you can't expect too much of the plot. Mm. by modern standards.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very elementary writing situation here. They didn't really have a script writer in the same sense as most other films did. So I think that you have to take that in its stride. This was made more to prove the point that you can hold animation for that long.
It won't make you go blind.
It will hold people's attention. It will be entertaining. And it is an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
But it's not a deep movie, and it really does feel like two different movies that kind of got blended together.
Fair.
Which, I know that I'm judging it by modern standards because it's the only thing I have. But as long as you don't judge it too harshly based on those modern standards, I think you'll have a good time if you haven't watched it in a while.
The legacy of this movie, Snow White, has become a iconic character within Disney, is in the parks, and so many the Seven Dwarves. There's multiple rides based off Snow White. Just a few weeks ago, Disney announced their renovation of the Snow White ride at Disneyland. For a long time, it was called Snow White's Scary Adventures and was meant to be a scary dark ride for children. No longer, now known as Snow White's Enchanted Wish, it's going to be more of a family-friendly dark ride with something that the original didn't have. The original ride ended with the old hag dropping a boulder on you. And then right over. The new ride will end with the happily ever after ending from the film. Some people are upset about, especially considering the fact that it's Snow White's Scary Adventure, and at least in Disneyland, it's not that far away from Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, which also ends with, you know, you going to hell.
Yeah.
So the idea of a scary ride based off a Disney classic, a lot of people want to keep that, but I can understand Disney wanting to, and they tend to do this with a lot of their older rides, update them, newer technology, and with a newer audience in mind, because Disney, in any of the parks, they're not a time capsule. Disney himself say that Disneyland will never be finished, and all of the rides need to constantly either be replaced or evolve with the times, and this is their attempt to evolve the Snow White ride to fit the modern times. Which, you know, let's give this one a chance and see where it goes.
I think it's very difficult to update the scary rides from the past with modern technology, because I think as you update it with modern technology, it gets more realistic and it gets scarier for the children. That the children who are the target of the ride might have a harder time distinguishing. When I was a kid and I went on things like, you know, Snow White's Scary Adventure ride thing, I didn't really find it that scary because it was kind of older and kind of cheesy, and there were a couple of times when it was like, oh, jump scare or whatever, but for the most part it was the type of thing that I could deal with at 5 or 6 years old. It was just cheesy enough not to be too scary, but just scary enough at a couple of points to, you know, make my heart beat a little bit faster and make me feel like I was a big kid for having survived it. But I think as you update that with, like, modern holographics and, you know, animatronics and stuff like that, I think it gets over the line of old and cheesy into, like, this is terrifyingly real and I want to go home now.
And over at Magic Kingdom, Walt Disney World, Snow White's Scary Adventure no longer exists. It is now the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, and it is one of the longest lines in the park.
One of my favorite rides as a kid, not in Disney, but in Six Flags Over Georgia, because I went there a lot more as a kid than I did Disney, was called the Mine Train. And from what I've seen, an almost identical concept, except with, you know, Seven Dwarves theming. And I remember loving that thing as a kid. So I think that's probably a good move.
This is how I first saw Snow White. There was a long before Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and the Lion King, Snow White was on Broadway. Technically, because it was at Radio City Music Hall in 1979. You could actually go on YouTube and find this live stage show. They staged Snow White as an actual stage musical with a lot of prosthetics. So the dwarves are actual little people, actors, with masks on to make them look like the cartoon characters. Even the Wicked Queen, when she transforms into the old hag, there's prosthetics, a full mask that looks like the old hag from the cartoon. Very odd, since the character has these big bulging eyes and they don't have them blink.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is that this year we were supposed to start filming on a live action Snow White.
Yeah.
But it has been delayed due to COVID, and I haven't heard that they've started filming yet.
I don't know if it's the one we were talking about, but one of the attempts at a live action Snow White was going to be based off the story of Rose Red. Snow White and Rose Red it's basically Snow White's sister, Rose Red, and it's the story of Snow White from her perspective. And if Rose Red existed in this version, that means that Snow White completely abandoned her sister.
Yeah, that's true. The one they were supposed to start filming this year was it was supposed to be a remake like they've done with Cinderella or Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be just the original film. And the songs with a couple of new songs added in. And they were supposed to start filming in March. And we all remember what happened in March.
Yeah, it looks like Mark Webb was attached to direct that. Mark Webb, who directed the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. We may get that film in, you know, a year or two. So who knows? We'll see how things go.
Yeah, so that's pretty much all we... Oh, yeah, I forgot one more thing. There is a cartoon series loosely, very loosely based off this movie called The 7D, which is a show about the Seven Dwarves. It's pretty much them in name only, as it's a completely different animation style. It's completely different other than the fact that it's about the Seven Dwarves that in the Snow White universe.
Yeah, and it's a prequel. It's long before they meet Snow White.
So this feels like this was that idea for the movie, but let's make it a slapstick kid show.
Yeah, this is supposed to be 30 years before the events of Snow White. So she is not even close to born yet.
Yeah.
As Snow White is the youngest of the Disney princesses at 14.
And yeah, I think that's all we can really say about Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. We are going to continue Classic Disney Month next week by going with the second Disney animated movie, Pinocchio. That's going to be fun to talk about, mostly because the production story for this and what happened the day it premiered. You're going to love hearing that story.
Yeah, the one thing that we didn't really mention is that throughout Snow White, they keep saying, Jiminy Cricket, this, you know, oh, Jiminy Cricket, there's a person in our house, you know, it's like that kind of, it's one of the things that the dwarves say over and over again. So
Let's just say that they're not talking about a cricket. And we'll get to what that means next week. That's all we have to say about Snow White. Tune in next week for Pinocchio. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye!
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.